You're with David Curtin on today's News Talk TNT.
Hello and welcome to the David Curtin Show. I'm with you every weekday, Monday to Friday from 10 till 11. We got a great show for you today. And of course, today for me is a very exciting day because it's election day for London elections, mayoral elections around England and local elections as well. I mean, it's exciting for me because I'm the leader of a political party and I've been preparing my candidates for the last 6 months. And this is the day where everything takes shape and people go out to vote. Now, because it is election day, I have two candidates with me on the show who are going to talk about various things. They're not Heritage Party candidates this time, but independent candidates who are also friends of the show. They've been on before. Miri Finch will be with me in the first guest section. She's going to talk about why it is important to vote. And in the second section, we'll have Andrea Smickley, who is an independent candidate for the London mayor elections this year. I did that last time in 2021. I'm not doing it this time, but Andreas is. And he's going to give us the inside view of what's been happening from inside the contest this year, 2024. Anyway, that will all be coming up on the show. But if you would like to get involved and join the conversation, you can. Here are the phone numbers to call in to the show.
Our lines are open. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Everyone was shocked by the horrible and horrific sword rampage that happened in the London suburb of Hainault a couple of days ago. And 14-year-old Daniel Anjorin was killed by the person carrying a sword, as well as four other people who were severely injured, two of them police officers. This is rightly shocking to everybody because you don't expect someone to be going round slashing people with a sword just as you wake up in the morning in a quiet leafy suburb of any town or any city in the UK. But this is becoming a more regular occurrence as the years go by. It just so happens that this is immediately before the London elections. And I think because of that, a number of people are trying to politicize this and making political statements about it. Now, there are various, truths to some of the things that people are saying. I don't think that things should be weaponized like this. But yesterday, the Home Secretary even weighed in, James Cleverly, criticizing Sadiq Khan. Well, that's not hard to do because Sadiq Khan has been an absolutely appalling mayor. I was there in the London Assembly for 5 years questioning him about all the ridiculous things he was doing, all the good things that he wasn't doing, and the ridiculous statements that he was making about many different things. But James Cleverly has accused Sadiq Khan of failing on knife crime. Well, that's not a hard accusation to make because knife crime is rising in London. And from 2022 to 2023, there were 16% more knife crimes, a 16% increase in knife crime, up to 12,786 incidents of knife crime in the Greater London area. Now, not all of those will be someone stabbing someone. Some of them will just be offences for carrying a knife, being in possession of a knife, where the police think that someone might have the intent to use it later on, and they've fortunately apprehended somebody before they can actually go and stab someone and maybe even seriously injure or kill someone, as what happened in Hainault, tragically, a couple of days ago. Over the same period of time, 2022 to 2023, the number of teenagers who were killed in the Greater London area went up 57%, from 14 to 22 teenagers murdered, many of them in gang crime-related incidents, many of them with knives involved. Camille Bardenok, the Secretary of State for Trade and Industry and Women and Equalities, so she's got quite a big portfolio there, has said that Sadiq Khan doesn't take knife crime seriously. He himself, Sadiq Khan, has come out and said he'd like now to give all police tasers. My personal view is I don't think that's a good idea to use an incident to give the police weapons, you know, as standard. I'm not in favour of that myself, but this is the kind of statement that comes out on the back of an incident where people use things to change what is going on and the way police and the security services operate. We have to be very, very careful about giving the security services, the police, etc., extra powers, because they might use them on you and me, innocent people who don't actually do any crime. Where you can see that some of these statements are true is that Sadiq Khan has been accused of being given funding for 1,000 more officers, but he hasn't used it. And Sadiq Khan himself is hell-bent on creating more diversity in the police force. That seems to be his main aim, not cutting crime, but increasing diversity. So he has a target to increase new recruits into the Metropolitan Police from ethnic minorities up to 40% by the end. Well, I think this was a target he had before by 2020, but he didn't meet that. I assume he still got that target, even though that hasn't come to pass. And the Metropolitan Police has actually been accused of now lowering the standards of entry so that there are many officers hired that are functionally illiterate in English, in order to boost diversity figures. Also concerning is that there are some officers being recruited into the police force from ethnic minority communities who have been in the criminal justice system before, i.e. they have committed crimes and they're being recruited to the police force to boost diversity. The police has traditionally been a career for mainly tall, strong, white men. Now, I'm not saying that if you're not in that category, you shouldn't become a policeman or a police officer, as we now politically correctly say the name of the job. But it would be better to at least certainly recruit tall and strong people. The majority of people who want to be police officers still seem to be white. So why there is now diversity criteria against white people doesn't make any sense. And it's better in terms of people being tall and strong would mostly be men. Now, again, I'm not against women becoming police officers if they meet fitness and strength and height criteria. But if you reduce strength and height criteria to boost diversity, if you reduce the criteria to have a good working knowledge of English to increase diversity, if you then also take away the absolute qualification and requirement that you do not have a past criminal record to boost diversity, then you are going to get a police force which is not fit for purpose and is not going to fight crime and is not going to keep people as safe as they could be if you did recruit people who were tall, strong, have not committed a crime, and were able to do a good job that the police need to do. This you can throw as an accusation of the diversity, at the diversity-obsessed Sadiq Khan. And it's going to be very interesting to see if this incident is going to affect the results of the London mayoral election, which is being held today. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma Cooper is with me on the show today, as always, and is going to bring to us the latest in the UK news headlines. Gemma, welcome to the show. And what's going on today?
Oh, thank you very much, David. Well, a 36-year-old man is in court this morning here in the UK in Magistrates Court. 36-year-old Spanish-Brazilian national Marcos Aurelio Ardoni Monzo will appear at Barkingside Magistrates, charged with two counts of attempted murder and three counts of GBH, aggravated burglary and possession of a bladed article. This relates, of course, to the knife crime incident you were just talking about, the murder of 14-year-old Daniel Ajorin in East London on Tuesday. Tributes have been pouring in for the little 14-year-old. Lots of photographs of his face on mainstream media outlets today in the UK. Very gentle, loving face. Lots of potential there, snuffed out, 14 years old. This 36-year-old charged with attempted murder in court this morning. Also, John Swinney is set to announce in the next hour or so his hat will be in the ring to become the next leader of the Scottish National Party. This follows yesterday the vote of no confidence in every single member of the Scottish National Party in the Scottish government by the rival Tories and Labour. But the Greens saw it off at the pass. They backed the Scottish National Party, so all its remaining members stay in. The hunt is now on for the next leader following the First Minister Humza Yousaf's announcement earlier in the week that he will resign once a successor has been found. John Swinney is the top candidate. Kate Forbes, who stood against Humza Yousaf in the last leadership contest, has not indicated yet whether she will throw her hat into the ring, but it still reflects the chaos, doesn't it, David, that is reigning over Scottish politics at the moment. As you rightly say as well, polling stations are open now for local elections across England and Wales, local elections, mayoral elections and police and crime commissioner elections. But the weather, a very dominating story. It's wet, it's cold, it's stormy. Trains are delayed. Businesses have been hit by lightning. Will people leave their homes to turn out and vote? I think that's the big question of the day. And also a breaking story. Within the last half an hour, protesters have descended onto a hotel in southeast London to stop asylum seekers being removed from there, put on coaches and taken to the controversial Bibby Stockholm barge moored off the coast of Dorset on the south of England. Black Lives Matter UK are among some of the groups urging people to turn up to the hotel and take action so that the asylum seekers can stay in the hotel and not be moved to the controversial barge, David.
Thanks. Well, you know, what's happening in Scotland really does interest me. I know we've spoken already on the show about local elections today and the terrible incident in Hainault in London. But this is an ongoing story in Scotland, isn't it? Humza Yousaf resigned. But the SNP won the vote of no confidence effectively. So the Greens backed them. So they didn't vote to dissolve the government. I guess the Green Party didn't want to go through an election again. They figured that maybe it's better for them and their seven MSPs to keep things as it is, keep things as they are, so that they can hope to form another government again if they get another first minister that they like. So I wonder, you know, and I imagine from their point of view, they would far rather have John Swinney than Kate Forbes, because Kate Forbes is known to be a Christian social conservative. You know, she certainly wouldn't agree with the Green Party and all of their transgender nonsense. And, you know, I think she might disagree to some extent on the climate emergency, climate alarmist ideology. So, John Swinney coming out already and is being touted as the main, you know, the favourite to become the next leader of the SNP. So if he becomes the leader and the Green Party accept him and they go into another coalition, does that mean that things just go back to how they were, just with a different first minister?
Well, if that's the case, Humza Yousaf must be even more regretful of his initial decision to break up with the Greens in the first place. I mean, who knows? This is the really interesting scenario about this Scottish situation, that it is chaos, it is disarray, and is everybody determined to bring it back to, you know, service as normal when the service as normal wasn't working because of the internal conflict between the Greens and the Scottish National Party in relation to climate, when the SNP backed down on their net zero targets, and also, I think this is more significant, when the SNP backed down on gender puberty blockers of the only NHS clinic in Scotland after the CAS review was published, that was announced that they would stop prescribing gender puberty blockers for teenagers and young people. And the Greens really didn't like that. So will there be policy changes or will it lead to further disarray, further disharmony? I think the Greens are so desperate for power in any shape or form, any semblance of power, that they will agree with anything and anyone just to stay in. Just to stay in that coalition agreement, that power sharing agreement, which Humza Yousaf was trying to, well, did dissolve, broke up with the Greens effectively. I don't know. Politics is such an egotistical game, isn't it? And I don't include you in that, David. I know you.
Thank you.
I don't at all. There are some good people, but in terms of once a taste of power is found, you will do anything to hold on to it. And I think that's where the Greens are coming from. But I don't think they're in step with the Scottish people. And I think that's why they realise how dangerous it would have been to vote a no confidence vote and force an election that could have seen them cast into the wilderness for many, many years. It's a situation to watch with interest. And you're quite right about Kate Forbes. You know, her ideologies necessarily don't align with Green Party values, good or bad. It doesn't matter. Take your own judgment on that, whoever you are. But the whole Scottish thing, I just keep saying and reiterating, Scotland's a wonderful country. Beautiful country, wonderful people. They deserve better. The people of Scotland who foot the bill for most of this deserve better.
Really, they absolutely do. And I hope that they get better soon because, you know, neither the SNP or the Greens are going to do any good for Scotland whatsoever. Nor, I would say, I don't think much of the Tories, Labour and Lib Dems either. But I think they're probably calculating that if they have another Scottish election, they would increase their number of seats, whereas the Greens are probably afraid of losing some seats, which means that they're going to vote to stay in power, even if it goes against their principles. That seems to be what's happening to me. But we shall see what happens over the next few weeks. Anyway, Gemma, thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking about the news headlines here on today's News Talk TNT.
Los Angeles has been described as a suburb looking for a city. Join me as we explore LA's neighbourhoods and the local restaurants, cafes and bars that are an integral part of these vibrant and diverse communities.
Today we are going to cook a small steak for people who are already quite hungry.
Very, very simple. A couple squeezes of lemon in there.
Since you're adding the meat, and you can also do it with tofu options as well for the vegetarians.
Olive oil. So now we're going to season it up. Fresh grind black pepper.
Really hot and busy in here.
I'm going to go ahead and make some butter toast.
Olive oil.
Smells good.
Grab our shiitake mushrooms. Season with salt a little bit.
Boy, it's getting hot in the kitchen. Need another drink of my beer. That's the best part of cooking.
And we are ready to put our plate together.
Add the mussels right around the rim. See, we have really nice colors, nice piece of fish.
We just need to add a little bit of powdered sugar.
And I will just put a little bit of reduction glaze over the top.
When you add a pesto like this onto a braised meat, the smells that just come up are just wonderful. Take it from me, we've got a good thing going here.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
London elections and local elections around England are happening today. And I'm delighted to have with me on the show one of the candidates standing in the London mayor elections. I'm not standing myself today. This time I did in 2021. But this time I've had on the show before, and I'm delighted to welcome back Andreas Mickley. Andreas, welcome to the show.
And again.
Nice, great to have you on. I mean, obviously, you know, I, as people know, I'm leading the Heritage Party. We're standing in the Assembly, but you're standing in the London Mayor elections, and you agree with a lot of the things that I would stand for in politics, which is fantastic. And so it's great to have you on the show to represent that kind of politics and the politics of freedom as well. And I think that you are the candidate that most represents freedom, because you, when the lockdown was on, you stood up with your gym and you said, I will not comply with these regulations, which was incredibly courageous. I mean, what is the situation in London if someone wanted to try to bring back another lockdown? It seems to me that you would be the only candidate that would actually stand up and say, no, we're not going to have this in London.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right in saying that. I don't really see that sort of fighting spirit from any of the other candidates right now.
Yeah, indeed. But so, I mean, you've been campaigning so the since the nomination papers went in 5 weeks or so ago. How has the campaign been?
It has been exhausting. You probably know yourself. You went through that same journey yourself, but it's been amazing. It's been so rewarding as well. When I, you know, like, it's just, I really feel it in my heart, you know, all the support I've been getting from people, and it's just, it's been an amazing journey.
Fantastic. What do you know now that you didn't know 5 weeks ago? What have you learned from doing this?
I've learned, you know, you hear people saying, oh, you've probably heard it yourself, these elections, they're rigged. They're never going to let like someone like you into power. If voting counted, if voting made a difference, then why would they let us vote? You know, you've probably heard all these things before. And I've learned really how they sort of rig the elections. You know, it's not like a, you know, like some in the movies where you see a bucket of votes being poured into another bucket or like that. It's really not like that. But the way they do it, I've learned, it is through brainwashing. You know, the propaganda machine is just so rife. It is unbelievable. You know, the way they sort of exclude all of the candidates. We've got 13 candidates, and then they've completely excluded all of them apart from the four main party candidates. You know, they were holding live debates on LBC, BBC, ITV, BBC again, you know, literally day after day, and just showing Tories, Labour, Green, and Lib Dem. So they've, and then on top of that, you've got like the two, you know, you've got Tories and Labour, Little Man Khan and Snoozy Susie, I say, and they're both just saying, this is a close two-horse race. And it's just like that sort of embedding that idea into people's heads, like making them believe that these are the only two candidates that can possibly win. Is it, and then people think, oh, I better vote for one or the other, the one I prefer the most out of these two, even though they're both, you know, two cheeks of the same ass, excuse my language. Yes. This brainwashing, it has been so effective. And this is the main battle that I'm up against at the moment. This is the main thing I've learned. It's been a massive learning curve.
You know, I mean, that was something that frustrated me so much, is that when I was doing it, it was like, you know, the debates, it was the COVID time. So they only had Sadiq Khan and Sean Bailey on at the time, Tory and Conservative. That was all they had. And now, you know, there's either two in your hustings or four, but they ignore the other nine candidates. And they had the cheek to say that these are the major party candidates and the others are just not serious. When I paid, you know, £20,000 to stand in this election, because it's £10,000 for the deposit, and then there's another £10,000 to be in the booklet. And if you don't pay that £10,000 to be in the booklet, no one hears about you. So you might as well not bother. So you pay all this money. And then they got the cheek to say, oh, well, no, you're a minor candidate. We don't need to give you a platform. It's appalling, yeah. Isn't it?
It's awful. And it's not only the money you spend, more so for me, it was the time and effort and energy I put into this. You know, you remember the nomination process. Actually, it was slightly different. I think through the COVID time, it was like you had to collect 2 signatures per borough.
Yeah.
But for me, I had to collect 10 signatures from people on the electoral roll from each London borough. That was a total of 320 signatures. Just that process alone was like a massive task, and it required, it took like about a good 3-4 weeks of, you know, being proactive, and around, and it was the whole thing. And I've been working on this project since last year, February. You know, it's just, it is a massive time consuming, a lot of energy's gone into it. And it's just for the, you know, for the mainstream media just to exclude me like that and just no reason, no nothing. It's just, it really is. It's brainwashing to people. That's what they're doing. They're brainwashing people, making them believe that there's only four candidates and only two of them can win.
Well, they always go on about inclusivity, being inclusive. And here they are being the exact opposite of inclusive for no good reason whatsoever.
I know. I should just identify as a main party candidate or something, shouldn't I?
You should do. Yeah, you are trans Tory or something. Yeah. No, that actually sounds quite horrible. Sorry, I wouldn't do that. But you might get on the stage. But anyway, we're going to have a quick news break now for a minute, and we'll be back in a minute to talk more about your campaign. This is today's News Talk TNT.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Let's finish it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. Former US President Donald Trump has announced an historic plan to protect the integrity of the upcoming presidential election. Johnson & Johnson has offered to cough up $6.5 billion to settle over 50,000 lawsuits claiming its talcum powder products cause ovarian cancer. And one of Australia's largest banks has announced its customers will no longer be able to deposit or withdraw cash.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Andreas Mickley, London Mayor Independent candidate, is with me on the show today. And we're just talking about the London Mayor elections and campaign. Welcome back, Andreas. And you were just saying that how difficult it is with the exclusion propaganda that is going on. And, you know, what I hear a lot is, oh, we must vote for Susan Hall to keep Sadiq Khan out, or we must vote for Sadiq Khan to keep Susan Hall out, depending on which side of the fence you're on. But you're there as an independent candidate. You've got good policies. You've got a good platform. To someone who would say that kind of thing, what would you say back to them? What would you say to them, you know, as why people should vote for you?
The main, you know, if I want to break down why they should vote for me is, and I think people, they're really starting to recognize this lately. There really is an appetite for something different. I'm an independent candidate. And when I say I'm independent, I have fully self-funded this entire campaign myself. I've refused to accept a single penny in donations from anyone, from an organization, from an individual, from any type of party, anything at all. And there's a reason why I did that. And it's because I don't want to ever have to owe anybody any favors. If I win this election, I would do exactly what I'm saying I'm going to do in my manifesto, because that intention came from my heart. All of my policies, all of my ideas, they came from me and experts and people I've consulted with. And that is what I intend to do. And I will do it because I don't owe anyone favors. If you look at the main party candidates, you go on their website, they've got a donate now button. They're all bought and paid for. Mm. We know this. You know, they only act in the interests of their donors or their cronies or, you know, the special boys club that we're not a part of. So I really am just a regular guy. I'm an ordinary person. And I really do just care about my community and the people around me. That's why I'm doing this.
Yeah, fantastic. What about your policies, however? I mean, we know Sadiq Khan has expanded the ULEZ up to the boundaries of Greater London. Susan Hall says she'll get rid of the ULEZ in outer London, but keep it in inner London. But how are your policies different to those two candidates in terms of transport?
In every way, you know, they appear to be, they play off each other's backs like, and appearing to be like they're offering something different. They are offering the exact same thing, which is misery and oppression. They are the uni party. I call it. They're two cheeks of the same box. They have no meaningful distinction. I'm different in every single way. You know, her offering to bring the boundary back, but then later on advancing into some other type of net zero target isn't a benefit to anyone. They're both doing exactly the same thing. What I'm saying with, for example, with transport is I am freeing up our roads. And I keep saying this, these are called public highways. Nobody owns these roads. To impose a charge or a fine on them to use these roads is fundamentally an attack on our rights to travel, our human rights to travel. Everybody has a right to travel. And it is just, it's the same type of right you have to, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of autonomy, freedom of everything. You know, attacking that with ULEZ, with LEZ, congestion charge, the tunnel tolls, the list is just never ending where it's going with these things. They are imposing authoritarian measures on us. That's what they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, I do agree with you. But the another issue that a lot of people are very, very concerned about, you know, given the knife attack that happened on Tuesday, obviously, the boy there, Daniel Adogin, was killed in Hainault. A lot of people are very concerned about that. But this has just become, immediately, it's become a political football. But Tory and Labour are saying, oh, you're not doing enough. And then they're saying, you're not doing enough. But what would you do about knife crime and crime, policing and crime in London?
This is the thing, neither of them are doing enough. And it just shows, and this will just continue to happen again, time and time again. That incident that happened, when was it, earlier in the week? I went down there to Hainault. It was such a horrible tragedy, but, and it breaks my heart to say, this is just going to keep happening and happening again, unless somebody comes forward and does something about it. And it is so shocking to me. I'm literally shocked that out of 13 candidates, I'm the only candidate that's addressing knife crime right now. I'm the only candidate that's come forward with a plan to combat and tackle knife crime. And it's just like I'm sitting here wondering, why am I the only candidate? It's election day today, and I'm still the only candidate that wants to address that issue. The polls are telling us, you know, all these whatever bias polls, whatever you want to call them, they're telling us that the most pressing and important issue to Londoners right now, which they've, you know, voted in these polls, is policing and crime, specifically knife crime. And no other candidates addressing it. I'm just completely shocked. Yeah, so, you know, we've spoken about my plan before. My plan's called Operation Brennan, named after a police officer called Norman Brennan, who was one of the key consultants to my plan. Yeah, it's quite a thorough plan. There's a lot of elements to it. And I truly believe it is going to combat and tackle knife crime.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. And people can look that up in detail on your website, don't they? Which is your candidate, your campaign website. And we'll tell us that at the end.
My manifesto was published long before all of the other candidates. It's been out there for, you know, months since last year. That plan's been there. Read it anytime you want.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, something that concerns me, you know, personally, and I think a lot of other people, is the erosion of our heritage, our beautiful buildings, our parks, our green belt, you know, for a number of reasons. You know, some people, you know, they want to bring in, you know, there is mass immigration and people want to build on parks and green belt. They want to build housing developments and a lot of people are going to make a lot of money out of that. Other people want to, you know, they buy an old building and then they leave it to get dilapidated. Then they knock it down and just build some horrible carbuncle, which is just ugly and inhuman. But what would you do, you know, to protect our culture, protect our heritage, protect our old buildings and our parks and our green spaces in London?
Yeah, so one thing a lot of people don't realise is that the Mayor of London, he has sort of ultimate jurisdiction over planning rights in London. So one thing I would definitely be doing is placing planning restrictions, a lot more stricter planning restrictions on our heritage buildings and on the new builds that are going up. We need to start, you know, looking at the buildings that have withstood the test of time. Some of our buildings here in London are older than America itself, older than the United States itself. And that says a lot. You know, these new developments, they get built up. They look like prison cell blocks. They literally look like they've been built with Lego blocks. They look horrible. You know, you said last time we spoke, they're marketed as luxury apartments. They're anything but luxury apartments. I wouldn't want to raise my family in one of them. And then they get built up. 20, 30 years later, they realize, oh, this building is trash. Let's knock it down. Guess who makes the money to build it up again? The developers, the cronies of City Halls, all the special boys club again. So nobody's benefiting from this type of cycle. We need to get out of this cycle and just start building beautiful buildings again, because our British, these British aesthetics is actually beautiful. You look at some of our buildings, I look up at them, I'm like, wow, these were built hundreds of years ago. What are we doing wrong? You know, we're hundreds of years down the line and we've degenerated so badly. And I'm like, how have we got here?
Yeah. And none of the parties that I've considered, you know, the main parties that are on the stage in the hustings, fake Conservative, Labour, Lib Dem, Green, none of them would do anything to protect our heritage. They would all, they're all guilty of destroying old buildings in the places where they have jurisdiction in local councils. So I think that's deplorable. So, Andreas, I'm so glad that you're standing. And then people have got someone to vote for if they care about all of these things, and not just to vote for someone who is, you know, bad to keep out someone who is worse, because the fake Conservatives and Labour, they play this game every single time. And then it gets to election day and people go, oh, well, I better vote for them. I better vote for the Blues, or I better vote for the Reds. But then you just get the same thing anyway. So just before you go, Andreas, tell us where we can find more about your campaign and your policies if people want to read them and look at them today before they go out and vote.
Yeah, so we've got my website, mickley.co.uk, spelled michli.co.uk. You can read my full manifesto there, my full knife crime plan there. The whole thing's been there, like I said, since last year. I was the first to publish my manifesto. I've put my cards on the table from the very beginning. We've also got the social media channels if you prefer something a bit more visual and you like me talking and seeing my face and hearing my voice. Yeah, so, and that one's at Andreas for Mayor. It's on all the main social media channels. Today's polling day. Get out there, people. Do it. You've got until 10 tonight.
Absolutely. Go and vote. If nothing else, go and vote. If you don't vote, you can't complain about whoever becomes the mayor. So that's great. Andreas, really great to have you on the show again. And I wish you all the best for the election today. This is today's News Talk TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
This is the David Curtin Show and today's News Talk, TNT.
Local elections are today, and I have with me another independent candidate in the show today and a friend of the show. I'd like to welcome back Miri Finch. Miri, great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me on again.
I'm really good to have you on. And you're standing as an independent candidate up in Yorkshire. I say up in Yorkshire because I'm down south. You know, so in Yorkshire, I should say. How's it been going? Tell us a bit more about where you're standing and how the campaign has been going this year.
Sure. So I'm standing in a ward called Kirkburton. It's the fourth time I've stood as a candidate since 2021. It's been going better every year. So up until 2020, I was apolitical. I'd never voted. I certainly had never considered standing as a candidate. And I was of the opinion that, it's all rigged, and if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it. But then when the madness of COVID started, I realized I needed to start reevaluating a lot of positions and use any tool that I could in this arsenal to fight back. So when a local friend of mine decided he wanted to start an anti-lockdown political party, I thought this is an avenue I really seriously need to consider. So I did join that political party, Freedom Alliance, and I stood as a candidate for them a couple of times. But subsequently have now become an independent candidate. So this year and last year, I've stood as an independent candidate. And this is all at the local council level. So I haven't stood as an MP or in general elections. But just in my local council elections, in a bid to get some genuine pro-freedom representation on the local councils. Mm. Because, of course, as we all know, it was our local councils who were implementing the COVID tyranny. It wasn't Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock going from ward to ward, barking at us all to wear masks. It was the local councils. So if we are able to get genuine pro-freedom representation onto a council, then we do really have a chance of platforming pro-freedom views and challenging any future tyranny the government may want to implement. So I've been going around Kirklees, my ward of Kirkburton, here's my leaflet here, and distributing that. And a number of friends of mine are also standing in local wards. So we've all been handing out the same kind of generic independent leaflet. And we've also been supporting our friend Jonathan Tilt, who is standing for the West Yorkshire Mayor, which is also tomorrow. And he's been getting a lot of really good feedback. So overall, the feedback has been very positive. And the impression we're getting from voters is that they're very aware of political corruption and that they really are ready for a change.
Well, that's very exciting. I mean, I know, I'm obviously in the Heritage Party, and we've got some candidates in West Yorkshire as well, one standing in Wakefield and one standing in Kirklees as well, where you are. So it will be great if they can all get elected and work together after the elections to bring in some common sense to those councils. But yeah, I mean, you made a very, very good point, is that some people would say, oh, don't vote. There's no point in voting. It's not going to change anything. But it does. But why do you think that there is this, it's almost like a mantra that some people say, and it's almost, to me, it's unthinking, it isn't true, but it's like a virus, a mind virus that goes around, and it's like it affected the freedom movement, if you like, and a lot of people are now saying, not going to vote, when actually, if you don't vote, then you are automatically going to get Labour, Tory, Lib Dem and Green. That doesn't make any sense to me. Where does this come from, do you think?
I actually think that this belief is sown by the establishment because it serves them very well. Obviously, as we all know, until relatively recently, most of us couldn't vote. There were very stringent conditions. You had to be a certain age, you had to be married, you had to own property, all sorts of things. Most of the population couldn't vote. And there was a big pushback because obviously when you tell people they can't do something, they say, hang on a minute, I want to do it. So I think the government realized the most effective way of stopping most people voting wasn't outright to ban it, but to allow them to do it and then cynically sow this belief, oh, it's all rigged. Oh, it doesn't make any difference. There's no point in doing it. Because actually, they now then get exactly what they wanted when they used to prohibit a lot of us from voting, which is most of us not voting, but doing it, we believe, through our own free choice. So I just think it's a more effective way of them implementing this tyranny. And what I have found in my inroads to politics is that they absolutely do not want us voting. They certainly do not want us standing as genuine pro-freedom candidates. And they do things to try and sabotage this. First of all, it's not easy to stand as a candidate insofar as nobody knows how to do it. You know, if you ask the average person, which very much included me until 2020, how do you stand as a council candidate? I wouldn't have had a clue. I didn't even know there were local council elections. And this is all by design, that they haven't taught us this. You know, they didn't give a civics class in school. They don't make this information widely available. And when people say, oh, it's all rigged anyway, they mean in terms of, votes getting shredded or extra fraudulent votes getting added. And that may occasionally happen in some very high profile elections. I don't think that happens at the local council level because I don't think they really have the manpower to do that. But they do try and sabotage it in other ways. So this is very interesting and very, dodgy. So we got this booklet which showcases all our mayoral candidates in West Yorkshire. And it's a legal requirement that it goes to every single household. Well, as of Monday this week, thousands of households still hadn't received it. So a couple of the candidates queried this with the post office, and the post office then discovered that they'd misplaced about 100,000 of these booklets.
Wow. That does worry me, because I know when I have candidates standing in parliamentary elections, you get the Royal Mail do a free delivery. So that this is by law, and it's all paid for by the Department for Justice. Well, I don't know why it's that department, but they pay for it. And you are allowed to give the Royal Mail 50,000, 60,000 leaflets, whatever, and they are supposed to deliver them for free. But I've had maybe half of the elections I've done, that there have been people who haven't got the leaflets that I've spent a lot of time and money on and given to the Royal Mail. They just haven't gone out. And, someone has actually sent me, from working inside, they have whole dumpsters full of leaflets that people have given them and they haven't handed out. So, it's a little bit hit and miss. You might get someone who delivers the leaflets, but you might get someone who doesn't deliver the leaflets, which I think is absolutely awful, because that undermines democracy. It really is appalling if they're supposed to do this by law and then they don't do it, because and you also might get someone who supports a certain party. I mean, in your case with this booklet, it doesn't, it's not going to affect one person or the other because everyone's in the booklet, but it's still, everyone should get the booklet, shouldn't they? Which I think is that's a whole other issue. But what have you spoken to in terms of the issues on the doorstep? I mean, what do from speaking to voters, what are they most concerned about, and who would not parties, but what policies and issues would sway them in terms of their voting?
Well, a major focus at the moment is buses, because there's a lot of kind of semi-rural West Yorkshire villages which are not well served by the buses, and especially for older people or people with disabilities, they're really struggling to get to their appointments. So that's been a major issue, but not just the unreliability of the buses, but actually that they're becoming quite dangerous. A lot of antisocial behaviour and crime happening on these buses. So people were very, very concerned about that. And I think crime in general. So one person I was talking to yesterday, he said, our current mayor is the ex-Coronation Street star, Tracy Braben, and she has claimed, she's done all these wonderful things to tackle crime. But he said, we're one of the worst boroughs for crime in the country. That's really not working very well. So that I think was a major concern for people. What is interesting is there's not much concern about things like, lockdown or anything connected to COVID, because I think people assume that's all over now, and that's not coming back. So we have tried to have the conversations with people that, there is a possibility of this coming back, maybe in the shape of climate lockdowns. So it is important that we get candidates in place who will, protect our rights. If the national government tries to push in another lockdown, we'll protect small businesses, protect our right to travel. So we have tried to introduce those conversations and I think get people talking about those issues again.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The media really controls a lot of what people think, don't they? So the media gives the impression, oh, COVID's over, lockdown's over, now we're all free, everything's back to normal. And so people move on in their minds. And I think people are bamboozled by so many things coming at them every single day that it just overwhelms people. They can't keep all of these things in their mind as though, everything is important at the moment. So that's another way that people are swayed as well, and they always bring up this idea of, well, there's just two main candidates or three main candidates, and there's no point in voting for anybody else because they don't have a chance in the first past the post system. Do you find that, or are people sort of breaking out of that and actually now looking beyond Tory and Labour?
Yeah, I think they are. So yesterday I was at a stall in Wetherby and we were doing some last minute campaigning for Jonathan Tilt as the West Yorkshire mayor. And a surprisingly large number of people came up to us and said not only that they knew who he was, but that they'd already voted for him by postal vote.
Right.
And this is something we haven't really encountered when we've stood in previous years. So it suggests that people are becoming much more open-minded. And I think an interesting issue, with this booklet, you're right, it's got all the candidates in, but people, as you say, already know the main candidates. They definitely know Tory and Labour. They usually know Lib Dem. So actually, these booklets are much more important to the smaller candidates who people may not have heard of yet. So, in an establishment that wants to maintain its monopoly, it would make perfect sense that they would try and sabotage this booklet going to everyone. But they may actually have scored an own goal, because it's much more productive for people to see your campaign leaflet as close to the election as possible, not, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before. But having delivered it at the last minute, which they have, it suddenly turned up in everyone's letterboxes this week, that may actually have helped the independent candidates. So,
that's actually good. Okay, maybe without realizing it, they've shot themselves in the foot, and then that's going to actually help Jonathan Tilt. He's been on the show before as well. So, I would recommend him in West Yorkshire. I think that'd be fantastic. Someone who's not beholden to any of the main parties and who is going to actually support freedom and common sense and not bring in low traffic neighborhoods and all this Agenda 2030 stuff that we are is being the climate emergency nonsense that's been pushed by the other parties and councils. Have you got that in Kirklees as well? Has your council declared a climate emergency?
Oh yes, we've got all of that, and there's very, very sinister, I think like 104 page document on the council website, as on most council websites, detailing all these things they're going to do to protect the climate. And they're just going to impose all these unilaterally. No one's voted for them. Nobody even knows about them. That is absolutely a very big thing here. It's something that Jonathan Tilt has been campaigning vigorously against, because although a lot of the COVID measures, at least initially, did get a lot of public support, I don't get the impression there's anywhere near as much public support for all this kind of green tyranny. So this is something that I think we may be able to really open dialogue on and get a lot of support on.
It really is important, because it seems most councils all around the country have declared this climate emergency without it actually being properly defined or based on any evidence. I mean, they vaguely point to the IPCC saying that, we've got to make sure global temperatures don't go up more than 1.5 degrees by the end of the century. And then they say, but this means that we're going to do this and this and this and this in our local plan, in our local neighborhood. So, I mean, this is a very good point you make there, that even though people have moved on from lockdowns, many of the same things are being imposed through this climate emergency, but it's being done under the table or through the back door. People don't know about it because people are not engaged, and turnout is really, really low. I mean, turnout for local elections is usually something around 40%, which means 60% of people don't vote, and then they get all of these things imposed on them. So if you're there, I hope you do get elected. That would be fantastic. What can you do about this and all these things that they're doing in the Kirklees Council?
Well, one thing you can obviously do is try and stand for your local council and vote for genuine pro-freedom candidates. If everyone on our side who opposes tyranny, whether it's green tyranny or COVID tyranny or whatever, simply went to the polling booth today and voted for their pro-freedom candidate, if they have one, that person will get elected. And then they would have some real sway in when the next piece of tyranny comes along, in opposing it in a practical and active way. Mm. But if people continue to regurgitate, well, it's all rigged anyway, if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it, then there'll never be any pro-freedom representation on the councils. And so the establishment, have won. They don't want you to vote. That's why they're making it harder. That's why they've introduced voter ID. They don't want you to. And they want you to believe that you're making an anti-establishment statement by not voting, but actually nothing could be further from the truth.
That is absolutely true. And you are actually playing right into the hands of the establishment by not getting involved in politics. So please, as Miri says today, go out and vote. And if you can, next time, get more involved. Stand to be a candidate, either with me in the Heritage Party or as an independent with Jonathan. He's doing some things to help independents. Jonathan Tilt as well. It's the Vote Freedom Project, I think. You're involved in that as well, aren't you, Miri, I think?
Well, not officially, but I have shared it and promoted it. And what the Vote Freedom Project does is it just gives people the resources to explain to them how to stand as a council candidate, how to get forms, how to get the nominations. So it just walks you through it. That's what it's there for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it isn't that hard, to be honest. I mean, the first time you do it, it's a little bit daunting because you've got six forms you have to fill in. But, you know, I do a training session with my candidates. We go through it in half an hour and everyone understands what to do pretty much. And for local elections, you only need two nominating signatures now rather than 10. So it's a lot easier than it was before. And it's free for locals. You don't have to pay. So there's no money involved either. So anyway, Miri, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I wish you the very best in your election today, and I hope you do get elected onto Kirklees Council. Please do go out and vote today for Heritage Party or Freedom Independent candidates. Coming up next, we have Rick Munn with Locked and Loaded. He's going to be joined by Jonathan Tilt, who is standing for the West Yorkshire, as we said, Basil Valentine, Jonathan Weissman, and Paul McGowan. Thank you so much for joining me on the David Curtin Show today. I'll be back tomorrow. This is today's News Talk TNT.